This is Xformation, brought to you by the Center for Growth and Opportunity at Utah State University. I'm Will, and today, like always, I am joined by my colleague, Caden Rosenbaum.
Hey, Will.
Talking about acquisitions, which I'm not going to lie. Acquisitions is one of those words that I literally almost always fail in writing correctly.
Hey, don't worry about it, because when I named the show notes, I had it spelled incorrectly. I missed the C before the Q.
Exactly. See, I either miss the C or miss one of the I's. It's like, well, I shouldn't even make a claim like guarantee. I really legitimately can't spell guarantee. I don't know how to spell guarantee.
You can't spell guarantee either?
Not really. Like, that's like my real main word that I cannot spell. I can do.
Don't make promises you can't keep, and don't spell
I literally can't guarantee anything. no, so today we're talking about acquisitions. Yeah. And really this comes from this recent Biden EO, this executive order on competition, which includes a whole bunch of things. There's a lot in there. Something like 70, I think, altogether, something like that.
Yeah, there's a ton. And the Twitter feeds that came after it were robust. Everyone was talking about it for at least 2 or 3 days. If they're not still talking about it, I mean, we're still talking about it.
We are talking about it.
But one of the key lines that I think that you and I should probably dig into today is this line about killer acquisitions.
Oh, yeah. This has been great. I've been following this issue for quite some time. So, yeah.
Well, it's finally in an executive order. Biden wrote, or the order says, over the past 10 years, the largest tech platforms have acquired hundreds of companies, including alleged killer acquisitions meant to shut down a potential competitive threat. And that killer acquisitions piece is interesting to me because in light of your work recently, these are buzzwords for me to know that Will has been working on things.
I've been thinking about this issue, this killer acquisitions issue, for a little while. And really, to step back, I think there is this really important distinction to make. And we'll put this in the show notes. I have a piece called The Kill Zone. There's this really interesting kind of thing that's happening between these two what are very clearly separate ideas, the kill zone and then killer acquisitions. So the killer acquisitions is a paper, it's kind of a singular paper. And I think that's probably the best way to think about it currently. But then there's this larger idea of a kill zone. So I think probably it's best to at least talk a little bit about this kill zone and then go into this more specific paper.
Yeah. Right, so I wanted to start with the midnight mergers. So the big issue with the kill zone, the killer acquisitions, is a big company buying a smaller company or two big companies merging and then pushing out all their competitors. And obviously that's an issue for competition at writ large. But this kill zone that you wrote about in your piece titled Welcome to the Kill Zone ? Is a little different from what Biden is getting at in his executive order, because you're really looking at midnight mergers and the 1976 Hart-Scott-Rodino Antitrust Act. And I just wanted to ask you, in your words, if you could just summarize that and help me understand how that's different from a large tech platform acquiring a small startup.
Yeah. So effectively what would happen is that, so this actually kind of goes back to one deal by the Washington Post, actually, of all people. And, you know, this is also kind of interesting when it comes into the history of these things, because, you know, there was clearly a political impetus in the 1970s to push back on this and eventually pass the, you know, Hart-Scott-Rodino Act, or HSR, as most people in the biz says. So these midnight mergers, as they were called, you know, happened. So effectively in I think it was in 1954, the Washington Post basically announced all at once that they're merging with the Washington Herald and the Washington.
And it was like the night after or the day after it had already been done, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so then there was this push through, you know, Hart-Scott-Rodino to give at least give the FTC some ability to look at these mergers. And so they created a
before
threshold.
They happen.
Yeah. So they created a threshold. And generally that threshold, so as of this last year, it usually is right around $100 million for the acquiring company.
That's how much the other company is supposed to be worth, or
yeah. So the deal itself has to be valued, because obviously it's one company buying another. So the right. value of the company, at least typically, is within that range.
Got it.
So and basically, anything below it is not going to get any sort of deal or any sort of review by the FTC or any natural review by the FTC. So I guess what's interesting is that then there's all of these deals which go below this level, right? And and this is what venture capitalists for some time have been wondering about, whether or not that there should be more governmental review for these things that are below the threshold, the kill zone. Now, I think it's also interesting that you see here, and this is what I try to lay out in this other piece, right? This other welcome to the kill zone piece, is that there's a lot that's going on there. So one of the things that we clearly know that's going on with the kill zone is that, you know, I mean, let's just be blunt. The IPO situation is very different. Companies aren't going to go to IPO as much anymore, right? The, the filing requirements are higher. The requirements by the SEC are higher. So there's ways that people are going through SPACs, right? SPACs are an easier, cheaper way of
what are SPACs?
So yeah, a SPAC or a special purpose acquisition company basically is, I mean, effectively it's a shell corporation, but the purpose of it is to acquire a private company and make it public without going through an IPO process. So it's it's a way that companies are going to market without having to go through the IPO process. And there's a lot that's been happening with this.
It sounds kind of shifty.
I think that actually, honestly, so a lot of companies are going this route because IPOs are so expensive to actually go through the process. And I think that in my kill zone piece, I listed some of these, the costs, and maybe it wasn't in here, but you know, a bank can take something like, I think it's like they can take something like 10% of your overall value of your company off when it comes to an IPO. So literally 10% of your value can be wiped off the map, you know?
So an IPO is just, you're releasing shares of your company out to the public in order to raise money by, you know, basically having new owners buying into your company.
Yep.
And so you're saying the bank can skim up to 10% off that?
Yeah, that entire process, there's this entire roadshow process that you have to get in order to go and be, you know, to be listed. Yeah. There are only certain kinds of financial institutions that actually can do this. So there's only certain kinds of institutions that actually can allow you to be IPO'd. So all of that entire process is, and then you add on costs on top of that, right? So you oftentimes, depending on the listing service, you know, they'll take a chunk basically off the top of your total value, or, you know, it could be something like, you know, $1 or $2 million. Now, if you're a company that really is trying to gain a little bit more investment, that's just way, way too costly. And so SPACs themselves have come up as a way to route around these problems, which is just the cost of regulation, if we're just going to be completely honest. But writ large, this idea is that the IPO process itself, I don't want to say it's completely broken, but the IPO process is really, really, really costly, right? Mm-hmm. And so the question is then what's the exit strategy? So if you're a company, if you're a company, the exit strategy could be, now, you know, SPACs are becoming much, much more interesting. So that's potentially an exit strategy. But traditionally, there's only one of two ways to actually exit. That was either go through an IPO or get acquired. So those are the two options. And this, I guess, is the big question within the kill zone writ large, is whether or not those sorts of acquisitions made by big tech companies are stopping an innovative process. And that, to me, is been really, really, really difficult to suss out, especially because some startups, and, you know, to be honest, I know a couple people very, very closely in the startup culture, and, you know, a couple of my friends have been involved in this as well. A lot of them, the effective purpose of their company is to get acquired. They have no desire to go through the IPO process, right? They're making a very niche product, and they're making something that is, you know, that they've researched heavily, and they want somebody else to take it to market, right? They don't have the market. They don't have the knowledge of the market. They don't know how to do sales. They don't know how to do X, Y, and Z. So they're just trying to bring it to market. And in that case, then it kind of makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. So that problem of exit, your exit strategy, I think is really, really, really key, especially when we're talking about these companies and how the FTC or the DOJ should be looking at these companies as they're going through this process, you know, especially as they're going through the review process.
So then I want to return back then to the Biden executive order, where he's claiming basically that this acquisition process is something like a killer acquisition. And you took issue with it. You're currently writing. Will have published by the time this is out.
I'm hoping it'll be published. But no, something exactly on this. Partly I read through the killer acquisitions paper. So this is the paper we're talking about. So I think it's important to talk about killer acquisitions, again, as separate from this kill zone. And just about a really fine point on the kill zone. Let's actually talk about killer acquisitions. So killer acquisitions is a really specific idea that was developed by these authors. And their idea, in particular was that, so this is, Colleen Cunningham, Florian, Ederer, and Song Ma. The idea basically with killer acquisitions is that companies will buy another company in order to stop a project that's currently in the works by that, you know, that new company or that entrepreneurial company. So they'll buy this entrepreneurial company and shut down a project that's in the works.
And if I understand it correctly, that was what they were focused on were pharmaceutical companies, right?
They were. So they were very, very clearly focused on pharmaceutical companies.
So like, let's say it's a manufacturer of a cancer prevention drug, and then an entrepreneurial startup comes up with a cheaper alternative, maybe like a generic, and then that the larger company would buy the smaller company in order to prevent the smaller company from cannibalizing their profits, basically, right?
Well, but there's an important addendum. Yes, this is a yes, but sort of thing. Mm-hmm. They would buy a company that has that project is in the works, right? And it's interesting is when it comes to the generic. So you're probably not actually looking at generics. You're looking at something that's directly competitive.
Oh, because the entire part of that competing one.
Yeah, so because the part of that paper is in fact that once the patent right ends, right? So once the patent expires, then there is no more profits to be had from the patent. And that's explicitly built within the paper. So they're not even considering how one might acquire or not acquire generics. And generally there's a lot that's going on within generics. But the idea is that you have two drugs that are very directly competing against each other in a market for a very, very specific time period. Now, but again, so those two drugs would be, you know, you have basically the incumbent's drug, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have an entrepreneurial drug that is a project. So that project still might require some development. So it might require some research costs or something else to actually bring it to market. Mm-hmm. But this idea of a killer acquisition has been applied writ large to the tech industry. And that's where the executive order is using it. And that's why I've had tensions with it, because it's like, well, wait a second. One, it's very, very specifically limited to drugs and in the pharmaceutical tech industry. But more importantly, almost all the examples that are put out there of killer acquisitions, like that's not a killer acquisition. Like what if, and you know, the kind of the classic.
Right. Yeah. Let me just like scope this back in then. With the killer acquisitions piece in general, before, you know, looking at another company, the way that I've interpreted it through your piece, is that as a company with your research and development department, you have a choice to make. You can either pursue a project and make a product or something, or you cannot. And with that choice, there's a risk that, you know, it'll fail, but there's also the possibility that it'll be successful, right? So that's the two options.
Yep.
And then the killer acquisitions piece is, but there's a third option that you buy the project. And with that comes two other choices, whether you just shut it down completely, which would be the negative connotation of a killer acquisition, or you develop it and you make it grow and you make it its own little product within your company, which is the second option, the one that we would, I guess, prefer more. But then that's harder to apply to tech, right? That's what you were getting at just now.
Yeah. And to put a very fine point on it, and thanks for bringing this back to the center of the conversation, because partly what I was trying to do with this original piece with my understanding of this killer acquisitions piece, right, is that killer acquisitions, I think, are kind of this paper is really a sub. It's a important paper within a kind of like a sub discipline of acquisitions and mergers analysis.
It's
important. It's an important piece, and I think it's an interesting sort of lens to look into the world. But it really, as kind of, I don't want to say as a matter of fact, but writ large, it fits into this idea of an option, and options theory, and probably this broader idea of acquisitions as an options. So
now, before you go into options, I just want to clarify what an option is that you're discussing. Because the way I see options is like the right to sell or the right to buy a stock. That's an option, but it's an option contract and it's really convoluted. But what you're talking about is different, right?
I mean, it's related, right? It's within the same field and the same idea. And it really is. You can just apply that idea of buying a stock to buying an investment writ large, right? So options theory really does find this kind of root in business and investment, because it is the ability to expand, change, or curtail a project based on some sort of market condition. So basically what you're thinking about, is that every single time that you have the ability, to invest or not invest in sort of a project, right? In the way that you can invest, or you can either buy a stock or not buy a stock.
Yeah.
But the idea is basically the same, right? That if you think about the stock as just a project, then you have the ability to buy into a project or not buy into a project or an investment as a company. And so since every project or every investment has this sort of value or an expected future value, especially as it comes to the drug companies, that we can think about the future, you know, the future that these project or investment to make as a singular lump sum, right? So we think about the entire future, you know, and you basically just bring it back to today and say, okay, we have this expected future lump sum of this project. And then you take that lump sum, right? That ability to make money, and you basically multiply it, but it's, you know, there's a little, it's a little bit more complicated.
You put it within a risk, right?
So you're understanding that your ability to make money in the future is contingent on other factors, including some sort of risk or some sort of uncertainty that may exist in the market.
So in essence, just whether you buy into Jeff Bezos' company back in the 90s.
Yes. Well, I think it's a little bit, so that's actually a really interesting application of this, right? Because in the 1990s, it was not at all clear that Amazon and Bezos were actually going to do very, very, very well.
Right. And but isn't that basically so for almost every acquisition?
That is for every acquisition, right? Yeah. And so we can think about every acquisition as having that sort of element, right? That you have this uncertainty about how much profit you're going to make or how much revenue, because it's really a revenue problem and not necessarily a quote unquote profit problem, because profits is, it's another thing. Anyway. But so this paper basically is just trying to take that and then gaming it out into the future as you've laid out, right? So you can either acquire a project and then shut it down, or you can acquire a project and continue with it. And those are two sorts of tensions. So if you acquire it and then shut it down, the reason why you're doing that is because it yields you, profit that hasn't been lost. And that's what they call an efficiency effect. And then on the other hand,
let's flesh that out just for a second. So let's say I have a drugstore and I'm on the corner of First and 15th East, right? In this hypothetical town. Yep. And then there's another one that pops up down the street, which is smaller. It's got better products, basically.
Yeah.
So the efficiency effect is that this other drugstore is taking away from my profits because it's got a better project or it's got a better product. It may be more expensive for them. They may be making less revenue, but they're also taking away my consumers, which makes it inefficient for me. Right. So that's the efficiency.
Now, I would be hesitant to use the word efficiency because I think that, especially with economists, is probably a little bit more nuanced. I mean, yeah, but that's, I think is because
just like generally speaking.
Yeah, and that's why also somewhat I don't know, I'm going to be honest, with this paper, I had a whole bunch of, like, when I read it originally and I was reading through this, I'm like, these aren't really the best
terms. The killer acquisitions piece.
Yeah, the killer acquisitions piece. I'm like, these aren't really the best terms to use because what we're talking about here is probably something a little bit different, right? Mm-hmm. But let's just stick with their terms.
Yeah, but just to go back to it, there's the efficiency effect and then there's
the replacement effect. So the efficiency effect basically is the value that one gets by buying a company and then shutting it down, right? Mm-hmm. And then on the other side is the replacement effect. And again, replacement, again, just doesn't really make any sense because it's not really replacing anything. That's actually what you would think about as some sort of replacement. Anyway, whatever. So at least as they determine it, the replacement effect is basically the value that acquisitions get in their in their marginal revenue. So it's the additional revenue that they get.
Well, then let's just apply that straight into Facebook's purchase of Instagram, right?
Oh yeah.
Instagram was totally unable to make money before Facebook bought it. And then when Facebook bought it, it introduced ad revenue, which made it profitable. Is that what
so that would be that this? Would be if it made it profitable and expanded the market, that would be the replacement effect as this original paper saw it.
As the killer acquisitions piece. Says.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, the efficiency effect would be in that one. The efficiency effect would be the lost revenue that Facebook would have because people were going to Instagram if people switched from Facebook to Instagram, which it's its own sort of addendum, right? That's a
yeah. But then there's this dichotomy though, right? There's the thought that Instagram would have become its own, that it would have developed advertising revenues on its own without Facebook, and then there's the argument that no, it wouldn't have. It would have stayed the same, and it would not have flourished. It may have developed a bunch of users, but it would have been too much of a money suck to ever go into the future that far.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. And then there's another level as well to this, which is you're talking about the counterfactual of if Facebook had never bought Instagram, which is like the big thing. Everyone wants to relitigate this. I would also say, at least as it applies to this killer acquisitions idea, that that what's interesting about it is that it doesn't really, even on the face of it, the Instagram and Facebook, the Instagram deal by Facebook doesn't really cleanly apply to the killer acquisitions doesn't cleanly apply to this deal, just very honestly, because what you were looking for in this instance would be something that Instagram had a project in the making that it could have either invested in or not invested in order for it to be competitive with Facebook, right?
Yeah.
And so for the most part, I mean, I guess you could say it may have been the advertising space, but not, I mean, it really doesn't, that doesn't really, I don't think that really computes all that well. What effectively would we be talking about is something else that competes with the core product of Facebook. Yeah. And to me,
because in the executive order,
right? They would have already been competitive. And that's the thing. It's like they weren't, the project, quote unquote, wasn't already in the works, right? The project already existed. It was Instagram, right? And Instagram's the thing that if it's competitive with Facebook, then it's competitive with Facebook, or it's not competitive with Facebook, right? There's no project that's in the works. And that to me has always been the problem with the killer acquisitions paper, because it's like, no, this is just a normal merger, right? This is a horizontal, if this is truly a competitive issue, this is just a normal horizontal merger between Facebook and its nearest competitor, right? There's nothing that it's doing that is a quote unquote killer acquisition. So,
but nonetheless, the executive order is talking about killer acquisitions because Facebook probably, I mean, it's the undercurrent is that Facebook is buying companies just to shut them down. And the example that just keeps being, you know, the book that just keeps being slammed on the desk is Instagram, that they bought it to shut it down. But I still have an Instagram. I know that Tara still has Instagram. I just got word today that I misstated what Instagram was created for, not for taking pictures of your food, but for editing your own photos. It's still there. It's still prominent, right?
Yeah.
It's not that they bought it to shut it down. It's that they bought it because it was good for Facebook to diversify, which is sort of what you get into in your paper, right?
Yeah. And this is the other part that I think was really interesting about Instagram's buying of, Facebook's buying of Instagram. So yeah, you're right. You've alluded to these emails and we can link to these emails as well. But basically these emails were released, I think it was 2019 or 2020. And basically these emails are interesting, and I'm going to read out one of them really quickly, but what effectively what happened is that this all started in 2012, and Zuckerberg emails his chief financial officer, David Ebersman, and asks for his thoughts on buying a company. And then basically Ebersman responds and says, yeah, he's like, most of the time I think that I have a pretty high bar for this stuff, I think he says, But basically, Eberman had said that, you know, there's really only four options for mergers or for acquisitions. And he said, one, you know, a deal could, quote unquote, one, neutralize a potential competitor, two, acquire talent, three, integrate products to improve service, or four, do something else. So in this, so he gives them, you know, options. So one is neutralize. But for our conversation, the two things that are important are one and three, right? Neutralize a competitor, which is one. Integrate products to improve service, which is three. And what I found was really, really interesting is that Zuckerberg says this very, very specifically in response. He says it's a combination of one and three. The basic plan would be to buy these companies and leave their products running while over time, incorporating the social dynamics they've invented into our core products.
Yeah.
One thing that they make that may make one more reasonable here, and this is neutralizing a competitor, is that there are network effects around social products and a finite number of total or different social mechanics to invent. So he basically is thinking that there's only a certain amount of products to invent in the world, right?
Right. And by products, he means he means algorithms to put in place that make content more user-friendly
he means like the underlying idea of those algorithms, right? So the right. underlying idea of Instagram is, you're right, is it's taking a picture. It's like the photo sharing aspect of Instagram. It's the,
which wasn't prominent for Facebook at the time.
It was not. No. And that's what he's thinking of here as the quote unquote social dynamics, is like the sharing of photos, right? Which is different than the core product of Facebook, which is sharing content. So it's almost like a microblogging site, Facebook Blue, the original Blue.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is to me within this email is probably like, so the way that you would think through this is like, okay, so wait a second. He's saying it's a combination of one and three. So if you just largely apply these two ideas that we're talking about here, right? This inefficiency effect and this replacement effect, it's actually not clear that he knows which one is which, right? Because he's saying it's a combination of one and three. Mm-hmm. But the way that he describes actually what's happening here is that he's actually kind of uncertain of what's going to happen. He says very, very clearly that he says the integration plan. So he wants to integrate, right? He's not going to shut down any projects, but he says the integration plan involves building their mechanics into our products rather than directly integrating their products, if that makes sense. So what he's thinking about is taking those mechanics.
Doesn't make sense.
Well, I think it kind of does. Is what he's trying to do, or at least what he's thinking about, is the way to integrate these things is to make Facebook better through the mechanics that seem to be present within Instagram.
Right. And I kind of wanted to touch on that because it wasn't to make it better to shut out potential upstarts, right? It was to make Facebook better because they had a threat coming at them from Google, which was another large company.
Which is the context to all of this, right? And this is – so I just one final little part of his email that I think is probably the most important that I don't understand that most haven't really attached onto. But Zuckerberg says, by a combination of one and three, one way of looking at this is that we're really buying his time. Even if some new competitor springs up, buying Instagram, Path, Foursquare, et cetera, will give us a year or so to integrate their dynamics before anyone can get close to their scale again. Within that time, if we incorporate the social mechanics that they were using, those products won't get much traction since we'll already have their mechanics deployed at scale. And so the way that he's thinking about it really is, and when I read that, especially rereading this piece from, you know, from the authors on killer acquisitions and thinking about this as options, like that's the classic understanding of an option. Right. You buy an option because you're uncertain of the future of how the market's going to be. And he's specifically saying that I don't really know what the market's going to look like within a year or so. But guess what? And this is what's the context to all of this. He said very, very clearly, we're already going to be integrating those dynamics anyway in the next 12 to 14 months, which he says also in the email. So the context of this, I think, is also really, really key. And I think it adds all of these, it adds a kind of another layer to all of this.
Yeah, because it's a race against time. Who can develop those mechanics faster?
Google who can develop Facebook? Who can develop what Instagram became the fastest, right? And and the clear context to this is that about 6 months before, a little over 6 months before this was written, Google came out with Google Plus. And Google Plus, for those, you know, and this is in the middle of 2011. So it came out in the end of June. And the day that it comes out, it is one of the few instances, the few times ever that Facebook has a complete lockdown. So they lock down the entire, I don't even know if you could do this anymore, right? This I don't know if crazy. Any of these All things right. could happen.
Tell me what this lockdown is.
So it's a lockdown that Facebook says, hey, we are locking everyone down and we're going to figure out that we're going to solve this problem. We have a clear competitive threat in the case of Google Plus.
And nobody leaves until we figure it out.
Yep. Until we have a plan to figure it out, right? So I think it was about a week that this happened. So I think it was actually kind of long, if I recall.
That's correctly. A crazy lockdown.
Yeah. And they've done this before. And they did this before at the very, very beginning. And this was a very common thread. You know, when people talk about like the toxic work environments, it's like, they're I'm not saying this is a toxic work environment, but man, shutting everything down and working on things until you have a plan is just kind of intense to me.
Yeah, but it wasn't an upstart. Like Instagram was. It was
Google.
It was Google. 90 million users, wasn't it?
Google basically started integrating all of their products together. And this is so the byproduct of or the what Google ended up doing with Google Plus is they basically put everyone that was a Google user, and I remember this very clearly when it came out in 2011, they basically added all users into Google Plus all at once. And so immediately you had this competitive, at least what was understood at the time, is a competitive check towards Facebook, or right. at least a competitor to Facebook. And that is
overnight.
Overnight, literally, right? So overnight. Yeah. So Zuckerberg clearly, so he locks down. It seems pretty clearly, you know, now Google Plus is shuttered, and it's pretty clear that Facebook has kind of won that war. But, you know, at the time, who knew? You know, who knew who was gonna win? And it was also pretty clear that Facebook didn't have a very good grip on mobile. But at the same time, again, what was also known in 2011 during the summer is that Facebook was working on effectively what would be a Instagram app of some sort. So I think the name of it was like Hovertown or something along those lines. But they had a very, very similar sort of project in the works that looked very, very, very similar to Instagram. Right. And what they'd said, so the context again of this email is that we're already going to have these things developed by 2 years. We're already have something developed in the next 2 years, right? The question is whether or not we buy Instagram and make up that gap. And that's what I think is really, really interesting is within this email, it kind of suggests that the way that Zuck is actually thinking about these things is as an option theory, right? That he's kind of thinking about these things as, hey, you know, this is our ability to be to ensure that we're competitive in the next 12 to 14 months. We'll already integrate these things regardless. We've already got an app in the works, so we can already do all of these things eventually. But this is the way to ensure that we can still compete against Google, and that we're not gonna, you know, we're not gonna get caught flat-footed against Google.
And just to put like a really fine point on it, it wasn't acquiring Instagram to shut it down. Obviously, it shut down its own app that it was trying to use to compete with Instagram, and it made Instagram bigger. It wasn't a quote unquote killer acquisition as the Biden EO makes it sound.
Yeah.
So then in closing, you have this portion in your kill zone piece before any of this happened. While policymakers at all levels of government should be concerned about impediments to innovation, a drastic overhaul to antitrust laws isn't currently needed. Do you still feel that way?
No, I do still feel this way, because what this actually does, and I think what this killer acquisitions paper does pretty importantly, and to just clarify what I'm saying with what I think Zuckerberg is actually feeling here, is that he's facing a lot of uncertainty in the market. And again, one of the reasons why you buy options is to mitigate against this uncertainty, right? The classic example is farmers buying crop insurance, but that's exactly what they're trying to do. And I think that Zuckerberg's motives probably are best understood as a kind of reduction of market uncertainty, which we really don't see this very often. We don't see somebody who's being very, very explicit about the fact that they're very uncertain what these time periods look like. But he's very clearly saying that he's trying to buy time, because that, you know, 2011 was a very, very rough summer. But the point being is that the killer acquisitions paper, I think, forces us to, one, think about these two tensions, right? These two tensions between the replacement effect and then the efficiency effect. So it makes us really kind of put a really fine point on this. But I don't think that it requires this paper and really the conversation doesn't require an overhaul of the antitrust laws as they exist, because this kind of stuff is still still debated, and it's still part of the conversation, right? The question I think the killer acquisitions piece is, as a technical matter, it's trying to develop some sort of test that somebody would be able to use and employ in the future in order to understand.
And the next Hart-Scott-Rodino Act.
Yes. Or, well, the next merger, the next potential Instagram-Facebook merger, right? They're trying to create a test to implement this idea of a Hart-Scott-Rodino, but trying to do it in a much more fine-grained level. And the question is whether or not that really... I'm not sure that you need to change around the antitrust laws all that dramatically if the entire point is still, you know, consumer welfare and consumer value, because that's still the question that's driving the killer acquisitions paper. They're just trying to do a little bit more technical measure about this. I don't think it's applicable, however, to big tech, right? And the paper itself, you know, we've kind of danced around the issue of drugs. But drugs themselves are very clearly overlap products, right? You either have a heart medication or you don't have a heart medication, right? Or you have a heart medication that works for high blood pressure, or you don't have one that works for high blood pressure. But it's very different than, say, Facebook, where you might have Facebook, as I'm pretty sure that you have Facebook, and you also have Instagram. Yeah. And you're kind of like competitive with both of them. So this idea of multi-homing doesn't clearly exist. And these other things also don't exist, right? So the big part of options theory is that this project is going to have a certain expected value in the future, right? You know that it's going to make you a certain kind of X amount of money. Well, that's very clear with drugs, right? You know, mm-hmm. generally how much the market is, you know, how much you're going to retain from it. So you're pretty certain what that value looks like. You're very uncertain what that value looks like for, say, buying Instagram, which is the case in big tech, that just the certainty of what the expected value is very, very, it's incredibly variable. And it's so
popularity versus medical need.
Yes, exactly. And those things mean that fundamentally, if you're going to apply this idea of killer acquisitions, this paper, this original killer acquisitions paper, you really, really, really do need to implement that into the analysis. So yeah. I guess all this is to say that the analysis really doesn't need to change all that much. It really just, this paper really adds, I think, a really, really interesting depth to the conversation. But I think also very bluntly that the Biden administration kind of missed the boat on what the important parts of the killer acquisition paper really, really were pushing.
Awesome.
I think
that's
that,
what I got, Will.
Yeah, I think that's it, right? Yeah. Well, we'll wrap it up in a nice little bow there.
It was beautiful.
Caden, as always, thanks for coming on and chatting.
Thanks, Will.